y'all, this is She Buys It with Whitney Nicely.
Yay! Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the She Buys It podcast. Y'all, Jennifer is here with me today, and she has already just blown my mind with the things that she was ready to talk about. And I said, hold on, time out. Hold that for just a second. We'll get to it, I promise. So, y'all, this is going to be a super informative and definitely educational podcast. You're going to love it. So, Jennifer is with us. She started in apartments, and now she's working on 1031 exchanges and something called a Delaware Investment Trust, kind of like a REIT, but we're going to get into that because I know nothing about that, and I'm super excited to learn more. Jennifer, is there anything else you want everybody to know about you before we get started?
I think that covers it pretty well. We can jump right in.
Awesome. All right, so tell me, now I'm completely obsessed with your first deal. So I know you've been investing for, what'd you say, 12 or 14 years, and that is awesome. But there has to be a time where you were doing something and maybe had a conversation or maybe something happened and you said, you know what, I need to be in real estate. So take me back to that time and place. Tell me what you were doing, and then we'll get into your first deal.
Okay. So when at that point, when I was thinking about getting into real estate, We originally, and I say we, I mean me and my husband, we were originally looking at, like, you know, duplexes or single family homes or things like that. And our next door neighbor, who is a real estate attorney and had done a lot of development. I know.
That's awesome.
Nothing like a little happenstance. Came over and said, hey, what do you think about, like, commercial properties? So that led us down the path into looking for apartment buildings. So, you know, depending upon where you live in the country, I think everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, there's a lot of older buildings sometimes. So our apartment buildings were red brick boxes that were like 100 years old that had 12 units in them. And so we bought the first one, and then we closed on the second one 3 months later.
Awesome. So tell me, were you working a regular job or you stay at home mom? What were you doing when you talked to the attorney and he said, you need to buy these apartments?
Yeah. Full on corporate America.
Oh, okay. Are you still doing that now?
I'm not. So I got out of corporate America about 10 years ago.
Okay. Awesome. So you're in corporate America, maybe thinking towards retirement or just thinking about supplemental or just diversifying. What was going on that you said?
Yeah, you know, all of the above. I mean, really, I do think it was all of the above, right? It was, so it started out as sort of the diversification of investments. But it was also the long-term play for how do you make this into an income stream in the future so that you're not, your income stream isn't your paycheck. So it was really twofold. And our goal was to start that process while we still had paychecks. And that way, if you screw it up, you got a little bit of a safety net.
That, and if you're, you know, buying commercial stuff, I guess you're going through the bank. So you need that W-2 yeah. to say, hey, that's I'm right. okay.
Yeah. I mean, they look at the financial statements of the rental property also, like what's your occupancy rate and just different things like that. But of course, they want a personal guarantee and they want to know that a personal guarantee is worth something.
Yeah. All right. So you're talking to your neighbor, and I love that because sometimes people say, you know, how do I find these people to build my team? They're literally living next door to you sometimes, or in the neighborhood with you, or two streets over from you, or they're at the PTA meetings with you. Like, everybody you need, you could get in touch with today if you absolutely needed to.
Yes. No, no question.
Okay. So how did you start to research getting into apartments? Because, you know, duplexes and single family houses, I feel like probably every adult can kind of look at it something and say, all right, maybe that's a good deal, maybe it's not. But we start talking about 12 units or more. I mean, that's a big chunk of the elephant to bite off in one lump.
Yeah, it was. So there was a lot of education that went on in that process.
Right? Well, wait a second. 12 years ago, we didn't have all these podcasts and YouTube videos and everything. So where did this education come from?
So, you know, some of it came from our neighbor, certainly, who had a better understanding about the mechanics and the tactics and the financials associated with commercial real estate investing. So that was hugely, hugely helpful. There was enough of an internet that you could look at cap rates and some things like that. So, you know, it was enough. to get us started.
But you didn't go through a boot camp or a guru or anything like that?
I don't even think those things exist. Well, they may have existed. I don't know.
They definitely existed because my first guru, I started in 2013, and he'd been doing this for 30 years.
Wow.
They just weren't as popular, I guess, or you had to be plugged into their network. I don't know how they did it before the internet because it's easy to find people now that will teach you how to do these things and all that. Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, so we're in and we're talking to the attorney. Did the attorney have this lead or was this a client or how did he know so much about these deals?
So he also had his real estate license. So he had access to information, whether you want to call it the hidden MLS or whatever the other networks were that existed at that point in time. You know, back then it wasn't as easy to see listings as it is today. And I still think on the commercial side, it's not as transparent as if you're buying your own house, right? But yeah, so he had access to those and we would try to find stuff on our own too, but a lot of it came through him.
Awesome. And he's already plugged into people that are wanting to get rid of properties and stuff like that. Was he an investor also?
Yes, he was. Not in the same type of commercial real estate as us, but yes, he was also an investor and a developer.
I got to say that everybody on my team, I have one. Most everybody on my team is an investor. And I love that. I prefer for everybody to be an investor because if they know something, then they're going to be able to tell me too. It's not like they're going to have to do extra research. They're covering their tail and it'll be easy for them to cover my tail too.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit, but you know, we had a property manager that we sort of inherited with the first property. And I have horror stories about when we didn't have her as a property manager, but nonetheless, she was also an investor and having that ownership mentality is critical.
Huge.
You can't replace that.
You can pay somebody to pay attention, but you can't pay them to think like an owner unless they are an owner and it's worth its weight in gold. I completely agree. And I like to talk about the good, bad, and the ugly. So tell me a horror story.
Okay. So horror story. So when we started investing, we had these two young kids, right? And my husband was also working a corporate job and traveling. And the second building we bought was not quite done yet. And it was in lease-up. So our property manager said, I can't do both. And I'm sure that you want somebody to manage both of them. So we found a different property manager. It was hell. It was just hell. I mean, we were getting no money. The property management company was taking all of the money. They had said that they had the perfect person in that area. It was a larger company, so also no real ownership mentality, right? And the person that they were like had in the area was really on her way out the door because I think she had inherited some money and she was this close to retirement. I mean, it was a disaster. And the occupancy rates fell. And so then they started decreasing the rent so that they could get people in there, which you know what happens then? You attract the whole wrong kind of person. I mean, it just went on and on. And so my husband would travel during the week. He would work 48 hours on the weekend or 36 or whatever, doing make ready work because the property management company was taking all of the other money. It was just awful. So, you know, 2 years into that, 18 months into that, me, my husband, my dad, and my stepmom are at one of the apartment buildings painting the hallways. And our old property manager who owns the building across the street was outside. And my husband talked to her and she was like, I'm ready to come back in 2 or 3 months. And we're like, oh my gosh, we're hanging on by our fingernails. I can't wait.
Hallelujah.
So then I go in to fire the other property management company and they're like, well, we're glad you came in, you know, because so-and-so, the person who was supposed to be paying attention is leaving. And I find out about all of these things that have been going on for easily 6 months that nobody is telling us about. there are times when I'm like, I'm shocked that I'm still married.
Okay, so let's talk about it, because everything that you're saying, I've written down some notes now. How do you stay in when it gets tough? Because this is tough, and you're working a job, you're raising kids, your husband's gone, you're having all these things come up on you. Are you paying out of pocket for the mortgage?
Yep. Uh-huh.
How do you stay in something like that when it's so darn tough? And this is just your second deal. It's not like you have decades of experience to fall back on. Like, how do you stay in it when it gets really tough?
I think there's a couple of things. One is that, first of all, I don't think you should be going into real estate investing if you're not a problem solver, right? If you don't have the grit to work through it, there will always be something that you're going to have to work through.
I completely agree. And as real estate investors, we are literally paid to solve problems. Like that's our entire job. If you think it's something different, I'll check you later, because all you do is get problem after problem after problem, and you got to answer fast. You got to make some fast decisions. And sometimes you got to swallow some pride and get in there and paint the hallways.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Sometimes you got to swallow some pride and paint those hallways. So, I think that some of it is just, and then related to those things, right, is the confidence to know that you're going to figure out the answer. And to not be willing to accept that this is just the way that it is and it's just going to keep going like this. And you know, no, this is what you got to do right now, and I'm going to figure out a better answer.
So if somebody's sitting in a tough spot right now, what would you tell them to do?
Well, it depends on their tough spot, of course. But, the biggest thing that I would say is, well, two things. Number one, get somebody else's outside view.
That's great advice. That is amazing advice in lots of different tough situations.
Yes.
If you get out of being in the thick of it and get somebody to give you a fresh perspective, it might just clear the fog.
Yeah, because there's no question that you get in the thick of it and the first thing that goes is your perspective, right? So that's thing one. And then the second thing is to say, there are multiple different ways to solve a problem. So, there's a story that Tim Ferriss tells about buying a house in California. And I don't know if you know who Tim Ferriss is, but he's like the 4-hour work week guy, right? And talks about buying a house in California and then deciding, and I think it was actually his residence, but this could apply to whatever you're talking about, right? And his comment was, I decided I didn't want to live there, but I bought it at like the height of the market. And then I was going to lose all of this money on it. So I didn't want to sell it, but I didn't want to be a landlord. And somebody said to him, you don't have to make your money back the same way that you're going to lose it. So you can sell that house for a loss and then make your money back up on some other deal. But don't hold on to a bad decision hoping that it's just going to turn into a good decision. It might, but it might not. So if what you based your decision on was incorrect, or the dynamics of the market have changed, or whatever it is, you got to be willing to call a spade.
I also like to talk to sellers that kind of have made a bad investment.
Yeah.
And I have to tell myself that I don't have to make that same bad investment. Just because they did it doesn't mean that I have to pay that, or it doesn't mean that I have to pay it in one lump. Maybe I pay it, but I pay it over 5 years and then I don't go through the bank.
That's right.
And then I end up paying less because I'm not paying high interest at the bank. Like, that's another way you can make money on a bad deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get a little bit creative and get that perspective back.
Absolutely.
Okay. Talking about Tim Ferriss and the 4-hour work week, I just read that book or listened to it over Christmas and I love it. And the whole time I'm sitting here thinking, there is no way this dude is only working 4 hours a week.
Right.
At some point in his life, he had it situated where, yes, he was working 4 hours a week because that's what he needed at that time. But even at the end of that book, he says, people ask him that all the time. How do you only work 4 hours? He says, well, after the success of the book, now I'm working way more than I thought. But it's okay for this season.
Mm-hmm.
And he does teach you how to set up great systems so that you aren't working and doing all the follow-up. You can set up some technology and some apps and some things so that you don't have to crank it all out manually.
Yeah. And I think a big, you know, a big part of the mindset shift for me when I read that book, you know, it's been a while now, but when I read that book was that 4 hours that you're quote unquote working then frees up your ability to do other things, which may also be working, right? But it's not the drudging of it.
I learned batching a long time ago, and some things you just can't batch. But if you can, one thing that I've started doing is getting to the office here at 8 a.m., and I may not have my makeup on, I may not be ready, I may eat breakfast, but from 8 to 9, I can batch out a lot of stuff that'll carry me through the next week, carry me through the next month. And then I can take time to put my makeup on and eat my breakfast, but I'm still in the zone, right? Yep. And so batching that stuff out helps me live. And if you sit down and say, this hour I'm gonna do this, and it carries you through 6 months, I understand the 4 hour work week. Like, absolutely, let's do it. And then, you know, that's before the phone starts ringing and then everybody has problems, but then I don't feel behind because I actually got the important stuff done. Or, you know, I work more Saturdays than I like to let on, but it's so that I can go get a massage on a Tuesday afternoon.
That's right.
You know, and so it balances itself out.
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, I think that that's a key to whatever you're creating for yourself. We're talking about real estate investment, but it gives you that flexibility to do it when you want to do it. Like whether, you know, some people are night owls and they want to do their 9 to midnight, right? And some people are way early in the morning and some people want to switch Tuesday and Saturday. And you know, that's a big part of it too. It's not so much about how much do you work or not work. It's about how do you work in a way that works best for you.
And where you're super effective, because you can log 8 hours and not get squat done.
There's no question. At last weekend, I was like, I really should. And then I'm like, if I sat down and tried to work, this is going to be a slog and it's going to take me 3 times as long as it needs to.
And when you're a real estate investor and you're not clocking in and getting paid by the hour, I would rather get it done in 4 hours than in 3 days.
Yeah. Nobody's going to give you a badge for working too much.
Nope. But they're going to notice if you don't get it done.
That's right.
It's all on you, baby. All right. Let's go back to this property management situation.
Yeah.
You said that they had a problem going on for 6 months and didn't tell you about it. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how important it is to have open communication with your property manager. And, you know, I bet you and your husband had to have some open communication situations that got a little heated.
Tell me
about the open communication with the property manager and what, you know, systems or strategies, or I like to set up expectations. Like before we did this call, I said, how long do you have for me? When I call somebody or when I get with somebody or when I hire somebody, I want to make sure that I am setting up the expectation that, you know, if they're going to give me X, Y, and Z by Friday, then I'll wait, you know, but if they're going to do something different or it's an ongoing thing, then we got to have some other things. So learning that lesson, what do you do to stay on top of open communication without knowing that every light bulb needs to be changed?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things. So one of the big, I'll talk about communication and then talk about the other lessons that kind of come with that, right? So I think I was fairly naive when I was dealing with this giant property management company. So my biggest mistake was thinking that they knew more than I did.
Ooh, hold on. You're saying that even though you're new, just because you were close and invested and had a little bit of a rhythm and they were a big giant company that can't tell anything from anything, they don't know everything?
I know, right?
I thought, you know, they all had it figured out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep.
I love that. And I love mom-and-pop companies. And if I pay 10% more to have my neighbor do something, then I'm going to do it instead of going through Amazon or wherever or a big property management company. I have a property manager on my 16 units, and she was a girl that I went to college with, and she was managing houses. And I said, hey, I got these apartments. I don't want to deal with them. And she said, great, I'll try it. I'll take it on. And she's been managing them for 4 years. And now she has a lot of apartments that she manages. But I love local mom-pa people. Anytime I can do it.
Yeah. So the property manager that was a rock star for us, right, was somebody that was local, had other buildings in the area that she managed and owned buildings in the area.
And knew contractors and plumbers and heat air guys. Yep. And they'd answer her phone when she called because she paid.
Yep. All of the things.
I love that.
So, you know, and I think, I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight that if I mean, first of all, I think we hired the wrong property management company when we went with a bigger firm. So I think you have to be very, like, we were the smallest fish in their pond.
So you didn't rank on the totem pole?
Not at all. Yep. Not at all. And, you know, really, they should have said, this is not a good deal. But why would they?
Like, well, I think there's power in turning business away. I talked to a guy last week. I was trying to get some windows installed. And he said, he kept saying, you know, we don't really do that, but I'll come out. And I said, look, dude, stay in your lane. If this isn't what you do, then I don't want to force you to do it. Do you have anybody you'd recommend? And he said, well, I don't want to recommend anybody because then they don't show up and then it's bad on me and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, I get that. But I don't want you to force it. If I don't fit who you like working with, that's fine. Just tell me. Don't drag me through it.
Right. That's absolutely right.
They should, I agree with you. They should have said, you know what? You really have to have X amount of units before it's worth our situation and all this stuff. But then they have to have it to back it up too.
Yeah. So, you know, I should have been more critical. When things started going south, I should have been more critical. But I think we all kind of want to hope it'll just fix itself. You're like, oh, then I don't have to have it. Hope is a strategy or not.
Hope springs eternal, too.
Hope, it does. Hope springs eternal. You know, and then after a while, it goes on for so long, and you're like, holy crap, now we're really in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had reached the point that we were going to fire them, and we were trying to figure out how to find a different property manager. And then, you know, we had the fortuitous run in with our old property manager. And then she managed them until we sold them both.
Perfect.
And for her, it also worked out because, and I, you know, I'm sure people have different opinions on this. I'm sure you have an opinion on this.
It's fine.
She's a licensed real estate agent. And in our property management agreement, she got the listing.
Fine.
And I'm like, which I thought was, I actually thought it was fantastic. I mean, like, now you're incented to keep it going. You're incented to do a good job when we sell it. I'm like,
it's brilliant. I love it. Julie that manages mine, she's an agent too. And I'm the broker for Whitney Buys Houses. I could manage it and list them myself. Yep. I just don't want to deal with it. I got other things going on.
That's right.
It's not worth it. And it's really nice that the tenants don't call me. They know they have to go through somebody else. You know, I got 15 houses. Those people call me, but I didn't want 19 apartment people calling me too. Like, at some point, I'm either going to have to pay somebody or just let her do what she does.
Yep. And, you know, so one of the things we were talking about this, you know, our property manager has that ownership mentality. So when things would go wrong, and they're going to go wrong, she had the perspective to be able to say, here's what I'm thinking. I mean, we had a giant tree fall on the cars in the parking lot. I'm like, holy crap, what are we going to do with these people's car? We can't get the tree out of there. We can't get the power company out here. Like, you know, all of those things.
I love that. Please bring me solutions when you bring me a problem.
Yes. and that is a very good way to put it. And she always did, because we're like, well, we can do this. We can do this. What do we think? Should we? And sometimes we would be like, well, let's start with this. And then if we need to do more, we can.
Yeah. And, you know, we're problem solvers, but I get a little bit of decision fatigue.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, like, yeah, I solve problems, but it'd be nice if somebody else would say, you could do this or this, and I could say, yes, or we could do that.
Yep.
And they say, or we could do all of it. Yes, we can. Go for that. Do it.
Yep.
I've started telling my girls, they bring me a problem, and I'll say, what do you want to do? And they'll give me the solution, and I'll say, I want whatever you want.
That's perfect.
That's how I ordered dinner, too. I'm like, I'll have whatever they're having. It's fine. I don't care.
Good idea.
I cannot make another decision today.
Exactly. And I don't, you know, and it doesn't really, it's all about how many decisions you have to make, not necessarily how big or small they are.
I know. And you're a mom too. I can only imagine how many more decisions you make than I make. Right. Golly day. Good for you. All right. Anything else on the apartments that you want to tell us or let the ladies know before we dig into these other situations? Oh, wait, no, we never talked about your husband. Let's talk about problem solving and the dynamic of, you know, going into business.
Yeah.
With your partner.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that we would never go into business with each other beyond that.
That's the nicest way I've ever heard it.
That is great. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're in business with our family stuff and everything anyway. So, and I certainly think you see lots of TV shows where couples are, we're working together and good on them.
I know. I'm so glad y'all like that because somebody would die. One of us wouldn't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. There's no question. Yeah. Lots of stress, lots of, you know, I think the thing that's challenging about that is that you really want your partner to have the answer and like, just be like, this is what we're going to do. And I'm going to solve it all. As opposed to these really stressful conversations about what the hell are we going to do? And, you know, and it was a lot more of those really stressful conversations.
And then it bleeds into dinner and family time and then Saturday and then Sunday and then Monday. And then you're looking at this person going, I don't know. I need to know, are you my husband right now? Are you my business partner right now? Yeah, yeah. Are you the enemy?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is very challenging to separate the emotion and the nuances. Yeah, I mean, I think you can get better at it, but when you're in a stressful situation, everybody sort of devolves into their basic mode of operating, not their enlightened mode of communication. And I think it's going to be worse when you have a separate personal relationship with that person. It's one thing if you had a business relationship and that was it, but.
I am partnered with my husband on our multifamilies. Mm-hmm. We've got an 11, a 5, and a 3. And we both have very strong opinions. We're both very much the alphas, type A, firstborn, in charge, right answer, all the time. And we had to divide and conquer.
Yeah.
It was, and I'll say this, and I'll say it to him too, it was probably a mistake to get all three of them together. What we should have done from the very beginning is say, okay, which one do you want? You close on that one and run it. I'll close on this one and run it. Because that's what we've done now. He and Julie run the 16, the 11 and the 5. They're in charge of that. I had to finally just wash my hands of it and say, there's too many chiefs in here. Somebody's got to go. And it was me. And I was willing to say, I can't put myself through this. But on the flip side, there's this other little triplex out here that I love and I adore it. And it gives me issues, but not a lot. And so I take on the triplex. It's mine. It's my little baby. It's my little show. And he stays completely out of it. Yep. His name is on the line, but he doesn't have anything to do with anything about it. And I really don't have anything to do with the others. My name is on the line, but that's just how we had to divide it because it was too much. We had entirely too many people in charge.
Yeah, I you know, one of the things that we came to, and initially I wasn't in favor of it, but I was the one who dealt with the property manager, even the crappy one and the good one. And it was just easier. I mean, some of it I think was also personality. Some of it was that I was more available. So I do think that's the other thing. And it's exactly what you're saying. Like, whatever that solution is, you need to have very clear roles and kind of say, okay, I'm making the decision. And if you think it's a terrible decision, you do have veto power, but otherwise you're not participating.
If you're not there for the Tuesday meeting, you can't pop up on
that's
Friday
exactly
and tell
right.
me I made the wrong decision.
That's right. That's exactly right.
We need to just go with that. Yep. And I won't do it to you either. It's fine. Whatever you decide to do over there is fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
And I will say that, You mentioned personality. My husband and I went into apartment investing with a coach. When I got started in houses, I had a coach. And I paid $15,000 to get my house coach, and I made $15,000 on my first deal. And my husband really saw how important it was for me to have somebody that I could lean on, I could ask questions to. Because what I was doing, I didn't know anybody that could do that or answer my questions or help me or just talk about it, right? Nobody spoke my language. So when we said, okay, we're going to get into apartments, he said, we're going to get a coach. Because he saw how important it was for me. So he knew that we would need a coach. And we'd also need a third party perspective sometimes too, right? So we got a coach. And I got to tell you, I did not appreciate our coach's personality. And he didn't talk down to me. He wasn't ugly to me. He was just a lot more analytical, like my husband. And so they were BFF from the very first 5 minutes. And I was thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be stuck with this guy for a year. And so it was the same thing. Personalities come into play here.
Yeah.
And you got to have a property manager you can hang out with. I think you need a coach you can hang out with. I think you need, and not just hang out with, but that'll push you and put you where you need to be when you need to be there and give you the perspective that you need when you need it. But your personality comes into play here. And I think your tenants, they got to have a certain kind of personality too.
Oh yeah. Agreed.
And that goes along with the communication and how do you like to be communicated with? And, you know, I've got a tenant and she said, I really need you to email me because I work night shift and I get paid every week and I'm not good. She told me this. She said, I'm not good at budgeting. Can I just send you money every week and have the rent paid up every month? And I was like, you can send me money as much as you want.
Right.
You know, just tell my bookkeeper what the schedule is and we will make sure you're cool.
Yep.
So your personality comes into it. And because we are women, we have emotions involved in it. And I would love to say that I'm a machine, but I do try to follow the contract instead of letting my emotions and my personality come into play. So how do you handle that? Because if you're working with the property manager and you get along with her and you didn't really get along with them, how do you maintain structure?
Well, I think a lot of it comes back to what you just said about a contract. So I think that whether you want to leverage a prenuptial agreement or anytime you go into business with somebody, right, you want to think about all the bad things that could happen. And build those into your structure when everybody is still on an even keel.
Everybody's still in the honeymoon phase.
Everybody's still in the honeymoon phase.
Make some decisions.
Yeah, let's make some decisions. And that's the biggest part of it. Knowing that you're not going to be able to consider everything that could possibly happen ever. But because you have that structure for 80 to 90% of what's going to happen, the things that are outside of that don't come as fraught with emotion because you don't have it in every other conversation you have.
And we don't want to talk about what's going to happen when things go bad, but let's be honest here, y'all, things are going to hit the fan.
Things are going to hit the fan.
What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And you mentioned a prenuptial, you know, I just heard about a postnuptial that you can get.
Oh, wow.
I'd never heard that before, but after you're married, if you decide that you're going to get into investing and he wants absolutely no part of it, up, down, sideways, or whatever, you can get a postnuptial that says, all right, I'm going to become a real estate investor and he gets no part of anything that I'm doing, no matter what state law or my will dictates.
Wow, that's awesome.
Now, that's a very simplified version of it. I'm not an attorney. I'm not an accountant.
Right.
But I'm the president of the Knox REIA, and our local attorney accountant brought it up that there is something called a postnuptial now that you can get.
That's awesome.
I haven't heard about that, but it's apparently out there, and it's a thing that people are doing. So there you go.
Sure. I'm sure.
I don't know that my portfolio at this time would benefit from something like that. But, you know, I could see maybe celebrities or somebody, something happening there or something. I don't know. But y'all check into that. And speaking of things that I've never heard of, tell me about this Delaware Investment Trust. My very first question is, do I have to be in Delaware?
No.
Okay, thank you. All right, now we can talk about the Delaware Investment Trust because I ain't moving.
So, when you're a real estate investor and you are have decided to dispose of a property. And you're gonna sell it, and you don't, and you've got the whole tax thing going on with 1031 exchanges. The window around all of that stuff that has to happen in terms of when you sell one property and identify another one and close on the other one is really tight. And the market on the buy side doesn't always cooperate with the market on the sell side. And so then now you've got this money and you want to do something different with it. So when we sold our second apartment building, we were talking to one of our investment advisors unrelated to real estate and said, hey, we're going to have this money and we're trying to figure out what to do with it. And they said, well, we have this affiliated firm that we work with that I think might have an option for you. And so we learned about I think they're interchangeable, Delaware Investment Trust, Delaware Statutory Trust. But what they are is a very specific vehicle that operates like a REIT, where you would be a limited partner. But it's set up in a way that qualifies for 1031 money. So it's kind of a place to park your money and a little bit more of a passive real estate investment while you're identifying other opportunities. So you're not as like, you got to do it in 30 days. And you end up with some piece of crap that you didn't want with a bad tenant.
And I was going to say, you know, a lot of times people end up with a piece of crap property that they didn't really want and they pay too much just because they're doing a 1031 exchange.
That's right.
I can see that. I have the perspective on that I could see that happening. And a lot of times when ladies come to me, they're saying, this person's crazy. They paid way too much for the property. And that's when I say, you don't have to pay that much. You could structure it in a different way because you don't know what they were dealing with back then. Maybe they got an inheritance. Maybe they were hiding money from somebody. Maybe there was something else going on. But people will pay way too much for a piece of crap property in order to save their taxes.
That's right.
And do a 1031. Yeah. And I love the way you're talking about this. It's super passive. And I've gotten into a little bit of private money lending. And, you know, that's passive because those checks come. I'd never see the property. I just don't do anything except sign my name and wire the money. But this way comes back to you in larger chunks and you're a limited partnership. So if something goes bad, it lessens your hit.
Right.
I'm really loving this. I'm going to have to dig into it a little bit more. So tell me about, I understand REITs. I bought a REIT way back in like 08 or 09, just off TD Ameritrade or something. I don't know how I even found it or what I was doing, but I was definitely dabbling in something that I did not understand. Mm-hmm. And that's my only REIT experience. I might even still have it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But tell me how this works. Do you see the property? Do you see the income statements? Do you just get a certain rate of return? Like, tell me the nuts and bolts. What you got going on?
So in this particular situation that we're in right now, we do know what the property is. I mean, we didn't inspect it, but we do know what the property is. And I actually think there's a handful of properties in this one. It's not a lot.
That's how my REIT was. There was like three or four commercial properties in California and like something in Hawaii or something that I was never going to see.
And, you know, there are some REIT investment opportunities that have a very defined life. Right. There's an intention that we're going to buy them. We're going to redevelop the property and then we're going to sell it. And it's going to be like 5 years or 7 years or whatever. And then you roll on out of that. Some of them are a little bit more ongoing. So the REIT sells the property, but they don't liquidate the fund upon the sale of the property. They just buy another property. Right. So there's those types of things. We have our initial...
But there's somebody that manages all of that. That's and you just get a statement. You don't ever know what happened to what. Yep. You just see it once a month or once a year?
When we get monthly statements, we have a defined rate of return. And so we're getting monthly dividends on that. It was a good solution for us. Now, we've invested in other REIT opportunities that are more of the, I'll call them self-liquidating, right? So you put your money in at the beginning. They buy the properties. As they sell the properties, they distribute to the investors. And then eventually, by the time you reach the end of your 5 years or 7 years, you've gotten all your money back and hopefully a lot more. But it's come over time. and it just, it's liquidating as the properties are turning.
Okay.
So, you know, in both cases, we're limited partners. So the general partner is really bearing the risk. They're also getting a certain amount of fees and, in theory, a decent return on their investment.
So how is this different from crowdfunding? Or is that just the new name for the same thing?
Generally, I would say the things that we've invested in are a little bit more like, I shouldn't say a little bit more, they're structured for accredited investors. So there's a certain level of capital and income and sophistication that you have to have to participate. So it's a little bit bigger than a kind of a crowdfunding, but it's the same idea.
You know, people have been doing basically overnight rentals on their house through Airbnb.
That's right.
You know, I'm close to Gatlinburg. People have been doing that since like the 50s or 60s, but now it's super popular and we call it Airbnb-ing, which, you know, could be on 8 different platforms, but that's what we call it. So it might be that crowdfunding is the new fun term for what we've been doing for 30, 40 years.
Anyway. You know, one of the things that I think, I'm sure, everybody has a different way that they think about their active real estate investing maybe versus their passive. So from an active real estate perspective, there are lots of folks who want to be able to like see it, right? Like I want to be drivable to my active investments so that I could drive by there, you know, once a month or once a week or whatever it is. With my passive investments, that's an opportunity for me to take a little less risk and to diversify geographically. Right? It doesn't have to be right here. And so I think those are opportunities as well.
And I call that a honey hole. Is your honey hole close to where you live or is it far away? You know, in California, a lot of times their honey hole is in Mississippi or Ohio or Virginia or something, but people in Virginia may want to invest in Texas. And it all depends on where you are and what season in your life and how much risk tolerance you have. And sometimes I encourage people to find a honey hole close to where you live because there's a lot of learning that goes on when you're just at the property.
Yeah.
And if you're at a place where you have time to do that, then fine. But if not, I think there's a place for everybody in real estate. And whether that's to be super passive, like you are with these and you just want to put your money somewhere besides the stock market and rock and roll, do it to it, baby. If you want to fix and flip, that is the definition of active. Wholesaling is a hustle. That is super active. Like you got to be active when you're asleep there.
Right.
I don't think there's any 4-hour work week that can solve a wholesaler's problems.
No, not at all.
But that works for some people. And you know, my first deal, I made $15,000 basically wholesaling. I assigned it. And so there's a place for that. If that's what you need in this season of life, do it. But there's other ways to make money in real estate too, just depending on what works for you.
Yeah. And I think it depends on where you are in your life. I think it depends on what the market is doing around you or in other parts of the country. You know, I live in the Midwest, and so we didn't really experience the issues that the coast had, good or bad, right? And I think you need to be cognizant of that. So what you will hear as you're going about your daily life is relative to where you live. And don't take that to mean that that also applies in Mississippi or California or Minnesota or wherever else, because you don't know what those dynamics are. And if that's important to the investment that you're doing, you need to take that into consideration.
And also remember that just because the market is doing something, there are still people that need you to solve their problems. People are still gonna get divorced. They're still gonna die. They're still gonna get behind on their taxes. They're still gonna go crazy and have a midlife crisis and buy a Corvette and not make their payment on their property. And they're gonna need somebody to come in. And that's gonna have nothing to do with where the economy is or where the market is. People are very people-y these days. When you realize that you are a problem solver and you can help sellers get rid of problems and make big bucks, it doesn't matter what the market's doing or the cycle or the whole economy or anything. There's still people that very much need people to help them.
That's right.
You mentioned a limited partner. Have you ever played Cashflow?
I have not.
Okay, so Robert Kiyosaki came up with a game called Cashflow. I got 7 board games. We have a Cashflow night at the Noxeria. If you come to any of my live events at She Buys It, either She Buys It Live or FTDF Live, we're going to play cash flow because there's a card in there where you get an opportunity to get in on a limited partnership. But it's the same kind of thing. The card tells you that the general partner has all the big gains, but it's really good to see if you want to get in and test your investment savviness on a limited partnership. And then there's another card that comes through that says, congratulations, everybody's bought out of their limited partnerships. And there's another one that comes through and says, uh-oh, you know, things have happened. And so I would really encourage you to find a local cash flow meetup or game through your RIA, or just a bunch of real estate nerds are probably playing cash flow near you. Or, you know, come to She Buys It Live in November because we're going to play on Wednesday night. And it's a board game, but it's not like Monopoly. It really teaches you real lessons in real estate and in life. And I love it. I'm a huge Robert Kiyosaki fan. I'm Tony Robbins fan. I love all that stuff. Yep. And I think, especially now that you're experienced, it'd be fun for you to play because you can see where you kind of, I don't want to say you hold yourself back, but you are conservative in certain areas. Yep. And it's play money.
Right, right.
So I honestly, if I can give you any advice, find somebody to play cash flow with you.
That sounds
great. My husband and I, he got it for me for Christmas one year when we were getting into apartments before we closed on our deals. And we were with two other couples. We went to Asheville, North Carolina for New Year's Eve right after Christmas when I got the game. We played for like 48 hours straight. And we went home. We were under contract on three units or three complexes before we started playing. We went home within 2 or 3 weeks. One of the other couples bought a triplex, went under contract to buy triplex. Like, maybe even some of your friends get together and play this game. It's an eye-opening experience.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Definitely do that.
Check it out. There's a kid version too, but I like the regular version. You can get it on Amazon. It's expensive, but it's worth it. Everything is expensive if it's worth it. Nothing. <That's right. laughs> You get what you pay for.
That's right.
All right, Jennifer, tell me, do you have any last advice for any women who are thinking about getting started? Maybe they haven't done their first deal, or maybe they're in a tough spot, or maybe they're thinking, I want to be passive. What advice would you tell a woman who's getting started or thinking about making that change? Maybe not even a career change, but they're thinking and dabbling. And what are you going to tell them?
So, I think a couple of things. One is I think you have to be very honest with yourself about there are going to be those moments where you have to look yourself in the mirror and make some hard decisions. And you know, how much grit do you really have? And if you haven't had to do that in some other area of your life, it's time for a little introspection. Because you're going to want to have that when you go into this. And the thing is that you could need that in the deal before you ever close, or you could need it 3 years from now when something terrible happens, right? You just don't know when that skill set's going to be necessary. So having a moment with yourself is important. The other thing I think is, and we've talked about it in a variety of different ways, whether it's your team or whether it's a coach or whether it's your next door neighbor or but having somebody who has the perspective and has been through some part of real estate investing before is critical. You're going to need their perspective at some point, even if you don't need their expertise. So, and the more you can surround yourself with people that also have a little bit of that ownership mentality, the better off you'll be.
And there's a chance your high school friends aren't ready to start getting into real estate investing. Right. You're going to have to find a new group of people to hang out with.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with it. You don't have to dump them and tell them they're all idiots. But you just need other people to supplement things that you need in your life. I had a woman tell me that she didn't want to get started in real estate because she was afraid she'd make too much money and her friends would be upset with her because they wouldn't be able to afford the things that she was going to be able to afford. So she wasn't going to get into real estate so she didn't hurt her friends' feelings.
That's fantastic.
I thought that was an amazing excuse to stay small. And, you know, I got to say, you know, when your kid comes to you and not your friends and they want this, that, or the other, or you want to go to the beach or you want to retire and not live in a concrete block room because that's all you can afford, where are your friends then?
Yep.
get some new friends. It's okay. You don't have to dump the old ones. You don't have to get rid of your church friends, but find some people that are on the same path as you. I love that. And, you know, I also want to add that this isn't super difficult. Real estate is not super duper difficult. The books, the podcasts, the blogs, everything that you've used throughout investing, it's all still available. When you get a coach, you just get it shortcutted a little bit.
Yeah.
You get it in a system and a rhythm and you just adapt it and roll with it and then you change it later. But I also want to say, ladies, look, y'all are getting toddlers to eat stuff that is not fried. You can do real estate investing.
There's no question.
You are getting your teenagers to put a smile on their face for Christmas card pictures and to show up to church on Sunday and be nice to people. You can handle real estate investing. It seems like a lot. But listen, ladies, you've been through some tough stuff in your life already. This is just going to be a different variety.
Yeah. I mean, and we've talked about a lot of things, but it's really fulfilling. I mean, and it's not an experience that you can get from your corporate job or, you know, feeding your toddler food that's not fried.
Or sugared.
Orange. Right. So, I mean, it's very empowering because you're in charge and you're making the decisions and you have you're telling the ship where to go here. So there's so much that comes with it. That's fantastic.
Just do it. Just get out there and start going with it. You'll figure it out. You didn't know what you were doing when you were first married. You didn't know what you were doing when you had your first kid. You didn't know what you were doing when you started driving. All of us have figured it out.
Yep.
Come on in, girls.
Yep. The timing will never be perfect.
Nope. Absolutely. Jennifer, you've been so amazing. How can people get in touch with you if they have questions or just want to follow up with you?
Yeah. So they can find me on LinkedIn. That's where I hang out the most. And it's Jennifer Peak. And I do have a consulting firm, and that's peakadvisory.com. So either one of those places.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was fantastic. I appreciate it. I learned a ton. Y'all don't forget to subscribe to the She Buys It podcast, or if you're watching on YouTube, then subscribe to the channel to get more interviews just like this. And I have a free gift for you. So if you go to getyourfirstdeal.com, then I'll shoot you a little something special into your inbox so you can get started, ladies. Come on. There's plenty of deals out here to do. And, you know, talking to these sellers and helping these people, there's nothing more fulfilling than that. I mean, those checks don't hurt, but helping people is also very fulfilling. Thank you so much. I will see y'all later. Bye.